Hi, my name's Sarah. I'm an alcoholic. And thanks, Ashley and the committee, for putting these events on. I've heard some amazing shares over the last few weeks. And thank you, Lucy and Magnus, for sharing earlier. A while ago, I started to write a book. Needless to say, it's not finished yet. But I've edited it so that it fits into a share time. And it's the only story I've got. So here goes. I'll just dive straight into it. I'll try not to gabble because I'm nervous. So, okay. Since a baby, it grew in me. At that time, neither a might or a maybe. As I matured, and so did it, waiting for the spark to be lit. I did not know what I did not know. This was to be my biggest foe. It needed a living host and destroyed the things I loved the most. It burned so bright and set me free, intent on only destroying me. Hi, I'm Sarah. I'm an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic of the hopeless variety, and by that I mean my disease, the one that tells me I have not got it, is now part of my survival instinct. It will come before all the others: food, warmth, shelter, love. It is numero uno, and I will lie, cheat, and steal to get it. I am not aware of killing anyone, but it is not outside the realms of possibility. I will not regale you with war stories, of which there are many. You see, the alcohol is but a symptom of the disease. The core of the problem is, unfortunately, me, me, and yet more me. So to be able to live, I have to get rid of the problem. And here is the dilemma. My natural state, when not drinking, is to be restless, irritable, and discontent to an excruciatingly uncomfortable degree. Wherever I am, I don't want to be. Whoever I am with, I don't want to be with. Whatever I am doing, I don't want to do. And it's endless, greeting me every morning on waking. So I need an escape from this state of being. Suicide, one immediately thinks. Yes, I tried that, clearly not successfully. However, I learned a very long time ago that when I took a drink, my reality shifted. First drink, God, I'm pretty. Second drink, God, I'm witty. By the eighth drink, I am a goddess, and all is right in my world. Unfortunately, I don't see that this is far from the truth. I am red-faced, tinging on purple. There is red wine spilt down my front. I'm argumentative, loud, rude, and altogether an unlovely and unattractive creature. In my goddess mode, this elusive, perfect window starts to dim. So starts the chase of keeping it. More alcohol needed. And oh, some extras would be nice. These normally came in the form of a man, or drugs, or preferably both. Then the chaos starts. Undignified, embarrassing behavior, much of which I don't even know I am doing. Some will be nudging at me the following morning to go with the shaking, sweating, and retching. The goddess has long gone, and I am left with the fallout. Humiliated, wretched, and beaten, I can't get through the day. Solution, another drink. So I scuttle off to the shop and back onto the merry-go-round I go. There are two of us in here, both fighting for survival, and so we are at war. This is the story of the battle and hopefully a message of a solution to the many others out there suffering with this disease. Because of my human condition, that promotion of self, no matter the cost, I draw comfort that I am not alone with this war. The fight is mine, and I am the only one who can fight it. How sad I have lamented in the past. I cannot buy, steal, or give victory. It is my own battle to be won or lost, as is everyone else's. Rehab. Now, here is Nyatna. Who knew that this disease was an equal opportunity disease? Young, old, gay, straight, rich, poor, it wants everyone. I have heard rehab described as the home for the bewildered. What a perfect description. On entering this alien world, with a new dictionary of words and even more confusing meanings, it brings a whole new light on the word lost. I am withdrawing from the alcohol and Valium. Run, my mind and body is screaming, but above all, hide. Eyes down, head bent, please don't talk to me. So I shuffle where I am told, a weak smile twitching. Please light me, it implores. Seriously, this is what it has come to? 4 weeks of this, maybe more? I am stuck. Filled with fear, raw from the reality of the situation. Nothing to block it out. Don't look at me, don't talk to me, just please, please don't anything. and I'm to share a room with four other women. Seriously, this cannot get any worse. I can't cope. I need a drink badly. Nightmare. My first rehab was in 1996. My last was in 2013, and many more in between. Each time I believed they would cure me. But as already mentioned, this cannot be bought, stolen, or given. Rehabs are great for putting time between me and my last drink, but they mostly use the 12-step program of the fellowships, and so are a good introduction to the many fellowships available. Unfortunately, too many enter rehab thinking they will be cured in some way. This is not the case. Oh, God. Before entering rehab, I had to decide which of me has to go. This is not an easy task. We had both been around a long time. I've just turned 60. So with the goddess long gone in physical terms, her behaviours were ingrained into my very being. Since her arrival at 14, I had only ever paid attention to her hunger, and any form of emotional maturity had been stunted. I did not know how to be a daughter, sister, wife. I never became a mother. I had been consumed with self and her needs. How do you kill part of yourself and still stay alive? I had no idea or any understanding of the road ahead. My go-to solution to whatever obstacle I faced in life was no longer an option. I want to die. I can't do this. Yes, you can, everyone tells me, but I don't believe them. I don't trust them. I'm convinced it is a trick and everyone is in on it but me. Get me out of here. I finally come to the understanding that I'm going to have to go through this. But the vital ingredients for any form of recovery are not there. Willingness, honesty, and open-minded. None of these attributes were, at the time, part of my character. I was a master of disguise, manipulator, and full of defiance. Alcohol had been my lover, best friend, and reason for being. Feeling sad, have a drink. Feeling happy, have a drink. So to be stone cold sober was raw. I was exposed and I hated it. Endless days of group therapy, talking with my peers, who, by the way, should be there, providing more evidence that I should not. Trips to the local fellowship meetings, more proof that I'm in the wrong place. There again, a language I don't understand is spoken. Have I been abducted? Right now, that seems preferable. Slowly, oh so slowly, the days pass. I feel stronger, physically I look better, and I begin to take an interest, grudgingly at first, but I am perking up. Gradually, I open to the experience and some light comes in. Maybe I can do this, and even I want to do this. The seed has been planted, my curiosity sparked. So I need to tell you about me in order to understand the situation. I was very pretty in my youth, and boy, did I use it. I could have any man I wanted, and many I didn't, including other people's husbands. My morals were few, my demands high, tearing blindly through my life, ripping up other people's lives. I'm on a plane to California to go to a clinic in Tijuana, Mexico. I have been divorced twice, written two cars off, had two heroin overdoses, an abortion, altogether one big drunken mess. My poor long-suffering mother has put me on the plane at Heathrow once again with high hopes that this time it's going to work. She handed me a bone ring my deceased father had given her in New Zealand to twist and look at should I want to have a drink. I am seated with a man either side of me. By the time we are over Aberdeen, I am already drunk. Not one look or pang of guilt at the ring. On arrival in San Diego, red wine spilt stains down my front. Both men had asked to be removed to different seats. Ah, luggage, must get my luggage. So off I weave. Whilst waiting for my case, I sit on the edge of the belt, suitcases knocking me. One knocks me to the floor. Not such a pretty sight now, just a humiliating one. Detox in Tijuana involves being hooked up to an IV for 10 hours a day, being pumped full of a concoction of amino acids. Drastic drunks require drastic measures, and desperate families searching for a solution cling to the hope of anything working. So here I am, once again, looking for the impossible cure for my addiction. It does not exist. I know because I have tried every possible way. Once I read that a Russian doctor could remove the addictive part of the brain. That's it, I cried with glee, the solution. So drunk dialing, I tried to reach him in Moscow. I did not, but at that time it was preferable and the easier, softer option to having to work on changing myself. I wanted easy, only quick fixes will do for me. Don't you know who I am? Maybe you are getting an idea now. Broken, beaten, empty, hopeless shell of a human being, stumbling around the airport, still in the same wine-stained shirt, slurring and not making sense, but still with this sense of entitlement. Unbelievable. After Tijuana, I go to a sober living house in Laguna Beach, California, run by Father Bob, a gay priest. Here I spent the next year. One condition of staying is to go to the 7 a.m. Alcoholics Anonymous meeting every day. I'm feeling good. I'm looking even better. I have hope, but I am still full of defiance, particularly towards the God word. I'm flattered when some young boys shout out the window MILF to me. Clearly, I have a long way to go. When at my all-girls boarding school, I had to go to church, I hated it. I hated it so much that it was preferable to be locked up in a broom cupboard for an hour and a half to avoid the tedium of the Sunday morning church service. As a result, I was completely resistant to the concept of God or higher power, as outlined in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. What a shame. I could have saved myself a few years of desperation, although I now realize I needed to have experienced this gift of desperation to find my own way to God, and it is by no means in a religious sense. So I got married for the third time in California, a lovely man, definitely the best of the three husbands. I passed my real estate license and worked as a realtor and got my beautiful dog Muddle. But this was not enough, and I moved to a house in the mountains of Andalusia, Spain. And here in this hideaway, I fell apart in a way I had never fallen apart before. I had been sober in California for 4 years, had a sponsor, been through the steps, went to many meetings, but despite being sober, I abandoned it all, including my poor husband. I was to pay dearly for this impulsive and totally reckless move. So you see, despite my not having a drink for quite some time, my behaviors had not changed. The steps of the AA fellowship are not a project to be ticked off as completed. They are life-changing. And if followed correctly, they change the person in the process. It is not me doing the changing, but I am changed, and here is the magic. I fell in love in Spain deeply, and I ran my own business selling rural properties in the mountains. Both satisfied me, both now gone. Sitting on the terrace, watching the sunset with my love, I was hijacked by the idea of how nice a glass of wine would be. And like many, I believed that given I had not had a drink for a long time, I could handle it now. And so I fell for the lie and I had a glass of wine. My partner had never seen me drink before and was exposed to the goddess in all her ugly finery. Alcohol owns me, body, mind, and soul, and I am completely powerless over it. The consequences of my drinking is not what makes me powerless. They are just the symptoms. What makes me powerless is once started, I can't stop. And despite knowing I don't want to do it, I do it anyway. So here we are again, beaten, broken, and hopeless. A head full of AA and a belly full of booze, not a good combination. This goes on for a few years, and in that time, I disgust and disappoint my family again. I have my stomach pumped. I lose my driving license. I lose my love. I'm incapable of running a business other than into the ground. I am given yet another gift of desperation. I abandon my idyllic hideaway and return to my poor mother in the UK. It is now 14 years since my first rehab, and I had much self-knowledge, but very little selfless going on. So I had been lumbering on with bouts of sobriety and bouts of drunken carnage. Yet more rehabs, yet more 12 steps, yet more sponsors. It was not working. I could not get it. By this time, I am not the only one filled with despair. My family too was suffering and exhausted by it all. A trip to rehab in Thailand commences. Whilst there, my darling dog Muddle dies. I complete 3 months and I rent a small house in Chiang Mai. I study for my TEFL certificate and I buy the tiniest, sweetest puppy called Albert. I make a bad judgment of reconnecting with my first husband of 20 years prior. We arranged to go on a visa run to Laos. I can remember vomiting at the stench and sight of one of the local markets, but I was in love. I felt happy. On returning to Chiang Mai, I picked up my little dog, Albert. I used to carry him in a harness on my front as I negotiated the chaotic traffic on my scooter. I was going to take him swimming at a lake close by. On the way, that oh-so-innocent thought popped into my head. A drink by the lake would be lovely. Once again, I was hijacked. Once again, no resistance. So I bought some vodka from the 7-Eleven. I am awake. but I'm in ICU in Chiang Mai Ram Hospital. You see, this is where that oh-so-innocent idea of romanticising a drink by the lake in the sun, watching my puppy learn to swim, has ended. I have cloth stuffed in my nose to stop the bleeding. I have metal pins poking out of my fingers and wrist, and I have a metal plate to cover the hole in my forehead. The scooter, I am told, is a write-off, and my dear little puppy Albert is dead. I have to beg my good friend Nick to go back to the accident scene to make sure he is dead. He does, and kindly buries Albert. He actually does much more than that, as the first hospital, unbeknown to me, was a mess. So I am transferred to the Chiang Mai Ram Hospital. I'm told most of this because I have absolutely no recollection of what happened. I return again to my mother in the UK. The neurosurgeon informs me how lucky I am, not just to be alive, but I am neither physically nor mentally disabled. Other than a shocking memory and spelling, I am pretty much good to go. A brain injury is a life-changing event, and it was to be a long process. You see, the who I am today is my reality, but there are subtle changes that are primarily noticed by my family. I remember applying for some jobs and my mother kindly pointing out to me that I'm not quite as capable as I used to be. So now I have two more people to contend with, the before brain injury me and the after. I am a very confused, lost woman and sadly still a drunk. A TBI did not stop me drinking, despite being medically advised that it was a really bad idea. But as usual, the alcoholic in me won with practically zero resistance. So in spite of all my knowledge and experience, I cannot stay sober. My older brothers insist on removing me from my elderly mother's home, and I am deposited in Bury St Edmunds. I attend Turning Point for 3 months, and yet again start another attempt at recovery. I do all the usual, meetings, sponsors, 12 steps, but I am not changing. I manage to string some time together, but I am not free. I still want and think about drinking. I am convinced I have had a spiritual experience, psychic change. You see, I can be as delusional in my recovery as I can be in my addiction. Just because I say I've had a spiritual experience because I think I have done the work does not mean I have had one. So another relapse ensues, nothing bad happens, and this is dangerous because my addict thinking clings to this thought, shouting at me, here, proof, you can drink, and nothing bad happens. So I start my journey again, but I don't tell anyone about my relapse. I carry this poison for a while. My ego did not want to let go of my clean time. I go to Camp Benson and hear a strong message of recovery. But this secret is dimming the spark, and I tell a good friend. I believe that this moment was my true surrender. I got honest and I got real with my program of recovery. In hindsight again, I can see that all these years I have been trying to engineer a spiritual experience and my recovery. I was still in charge. When I first started my journey, I was hungry for recovery. It was like a bright, shiny jewel, but every time I relapsed, a little bit of the shine went. The hunger went, it became tarnished. From that moment, everything changed. I truly have a God in my life, and I am once again hungry for recovery, hungry for life, hungry for freedom. Today, I don't just throw a prayer out because I think I should. Today, I pray from my heart. I talk with my God, I walk with my God, and I sit with my God. I am still very removed and turned off by religion. My church is being in nature with my dog and where I can feel God and connect. Not because I've been told to, but because I want to. The least I can do is give my time and respect. Not a very big price to pay when I have been given a freedom I never imagined possible. See page 84, 85, 85. This is what I relate to in the big book now. Suddenly, life is not all about me. And I notice these tiny little details of change. I will pick up dog poo that's not my dog's. I went through my fag ends on this ground. A million subtle, tiny changes and actions that bring about a psychic reorganization, a joy in seeing the light come back into people's eyes and life, a desire to reach out and help another addict. There is magic in the steps and in the fellowships, and the beauty of it is available to everyone, and it too is indiscriminate. So, as with my addiction, I am still the problem. For all these years and with all that knowledge, I could not let go. That's all I had to do was get out of the way. I just didn't know how. I had to let the steps and the process change me, not in a way I thought I should be changed, but subtly, slowly, and significantly. I love that this is a lifetime process, and I am constantly learning and evolving. How I live today reflects on all my tomorrows. I can learn from you and vice versa. Aren't we lucky? Don't waste it. What is my message? Keep trying. It might not happen the first, second, or umpteenth time, but it will happen. And for many, it does happen at the first shot. I was not one of those, and that doesn't matter now. As I understand, it took what it took, and everything happens in God's time. And I needed the experience I have lived to be the happy, joyous, and free woman I am today. That's it. Thank you.